You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for May 2nd, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside Donald Sterling's updated OKCupid profile, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
He's available, ladies.
Yeah. Oh, boy, is he available. And someone will snap him up.
Oh, absolutely, because he has the capacity to give away a $1.8 million condo to his girlfriend. So,
sure.
So I'm working on the OKCupid profile. What I've got so far is me. I just got kicked out of the NBA and I'm ready for love. You're supposed to be a delicate white or a delicate Latina girl.
Yeah.
Which is what he said to his girlfriend.
Yeah.
About her Instagramming herself with, what did he call them? Black people?
Yes. Yes. He does not want to see her out. And really, what I and this story's been covered to death. And it came right after Clavern Bundy opened his, you know, pie hole and embraced his inner Klansman on camera.
Yep.
Bless his heart. But I mean, these two guys are basically the same age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are.
They're at opposite ends of the class spectrum.
Certainly the income. Well, I mean, Cliven Bundy owes $1 million to the IRS. So
now,
I don't know what his income is, but in terms of status.
Yes, that's exactly
in right. L.A. Yeah. Donald Sterling had higher status than Cliven Bundy could ever hope to achieve.
And there's nothing really more to be learned from or wrung out of the fact that this guy, that first of all, the NBA dropped the house on him.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, they should have dropped the house on him years ago for his really contemptible behavior towards his tenants.
Mm-hmm.
But this is so much more of a class conversation.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, the racial aspect is so clear, it really doesn't need to be, you don't need to highlight.
Well, and I think the sexual politics of it is important, too.
Absolutely.
The recorded argument, the recording that was made, which was apparently made with his permission, the argument that they had, this 31-year-old girlfriend and the 80-year-old Donald Sterling had, was about who owns her body when she's in public.
Exactly.
Period.
Exactly.
And you said to me earlier this week, you know so many rich assholes like this.
Oh, I do. I absolutely do.
Own people. You know, no, I own you. You know, you're on my team. You're on my staff. You're on my whatever. You're my girlfriend. You're my wife. You're my kid.
Yeah.
I have all the money. Therefore, I own you.
And there's that wonderful line that will probably be the title of this podcast from Mad Men, where Peggy is complaining and on the verge of crying that she gives Don all these good ideas.
And she gets no credit for it.
And he says, that's what the money's for.
Yeah.
You never say thank you. That's what the money's for.
Mm-hmm.
It is such a masterful encapsulation.
I pay you to be my idea girl.
Right. That's your job. And I
don't get national credit for it because I pay you and I own you. Yeah.
And you remember, you might not remember, but before Alan Keyes was hit like a bug on a windshield by the Obama Senate campaign, there was a guy named Jack Ryan.
Yes.
Lovely Kennedy hair. He looked the part. And his wife was Jeri Ryan.
And she was a babe.
That's.
And I don't mean that in a sexist way. She was just drop dead, gorgeous, perfect body.
She's 7 of 9 on Star Trek Voyager. Okay, she's that one, and she's a knockout, and she's the perfect. She seems like a really nice person, but she was, for the purposes of politics, perfect arm candy.
Yep.
For Jack Kennedy, essentially, that's who he was running as.
Yep.
And he got in trouble because
he was a Republican, Jack Kennedy.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And they looked great together. He looked the part, and he was saying all the right things. Until we discovered that he was out essentially trolling her out at singles clubs.
Yeah. And making her available to other people.
Now, whether or not anything was ever consummated, I don't know. Probably not. But the idea was, she's my property.
Yeah.
And she was very uncomfortable with that. And I
was to say,
I know I have had encounters with assholes at that income level who really don't understand why they can't do whatever the fuck they want with you because they bought you. That's the deal. Here's the arrangement. I gave you a ring. I gave you an apartment. I bought you a whatever. And from the girlfriend of a minor Chinatown gangster I used to know many, many, many years ago, to people I knew when I was much more of an adult, it is absolutely consistent. Other people are property.
Mm-hmm.
And money is all that counts. And I have the money. I've paid you to do this. Now shut the fuck up and do it, whatever it is. Is it you know, blowing my friends? Is it being seen on my arm? It's all one thing. Don Sterling didn't care that she was sleeping around.
No.
He cared that she was, when she was with him, when she was representing him in
public. Or at his place of business. Yeah.
Exactly. And she
or on Instagram. Right.
Yeah. And she was an employee. And this is what this gets to, in my mind, is this is sort of the one of the ultimate examples of at-will employment.
Yes.
You know, you have a job.
I pay you to be here. Yes.
And if I if I choose to fire you for whatever reason that is suitable to me, you're gone. And however I choose to treat you, I get to do that because I'm paying you.
Yeah.
And when you listen to people who are getting fired from shoe stores or fast food places because they didn't jump high enough or they didn't look the part or they weren't pretty enough to sit at the front desk or they were too old or they were too overqualified, that's what this is about. This is about the person who has the money gets to set the terms under which you will be employed.
Yeah, and I don't care if your kid's sick, and I don't care if you're pregnant. I mean, this has become the latest thing, is pregnant women being asked to stand for 8.5 hours because, well, that's your job. You work in the shoe store, so you have to stand up.
And Donald Sterling is a pinnacle example of Randite thinking.
And the only thing that defends workers from people like that is government regulation.
Government regulation and organized labor, which we really have very little of, and we're getting less every day. From adjunct professors all the way up and out in every direction, the imbalance between not just income, but the power income brings.
Mm-hmm.
Between the haves and the have-nots is
so... Well, and particularly when we're getting into a point of oligarchy where even the Supreme Court just allows people who have money to have the voice in how things are done.
And what's really critical to remember is there are people who walk among us as citizens who look at Donald Sterling and think that's the way it should be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, he says something embarrassing in public. Maybe, you know, maybe he needs to get slapped around for that. But the idea behind it, the idea that money is morality...
Yep.
And the more you have, the better you are. And whatever you choose to do with it, up to including buying and selling people and telling them what to do and how to pose when they are your property, is perfectly okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the measure of what it means to be a conservative in America today. That's why the line between Bundy and Sterling is not that long.
Right.
I mean, Bundy looked at the Negro as property, as furniture.
Well,
as
and when you add the component of white supremacy, white male supremacy to that, not only do I get to tell you what to do because I own you, but I know what's better for you. And that was in both cases. Clearly, Donald Sterling was thinking in his, and so was Bundy, thinking, I only want what's best for the person I'm talking down to.
Yes.
And so I'm telling you, don't expose yourself like this with black people, or I'm telling you that these black people in the inner city who don't work would be better off.
Right.
And it's that because I'm white and male and have money, I get to determine what is good for you.
And even a little bit further than that, mm-hmm. Even though I say, here's a thing that's good for you to do and you should do it, and I'm going to make you do it if I can, I exempt myself from my own rules.
Yeah.
You know, those people who live on government subsidy, they abort their young girls, abort their babies. They abort their young women. And that, well, dude, you live on government subsidy. Well, that doesn't apply to me because I'm white and male.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm immune to this sort of thing. It reminds me of what's his name, who was Reagan's attorney general, who studied porn. Who created the 9 million-page porn report, but was somehow immune to its effects. It's bad for other people. It'll fuck up other people, but not me. Oh, Meese. Edwin Meese.
Meese. Ed Meese.
So
I've been watching porn for 13 and a half months for you people.
And when you talk to people who think this way, mm-hmm. you cannot help but notice that. And this, I don't mean to take this further than it should be taken, but talk to them about Benghazi.
Yeah.
Four dead Americans. That's the greatest tragedy and the greatest shameful, impeachable offense in American history. What about the 13 Benghazis under Bush? Well, that doesn't count. I don't even remember that.
What about the 4,000 dead Americans?
Doesn't count because I did it. It's not immoral because I did it. And by definition, because I'm a conservative, because I'm a white male, whatever I do is by definition not immoral. Morality is for little people, for other people, for those people. Mm-hmm. Terms of service are for those people, not for me. And what really is telling in pretty much every conversation I've ever had with conservatives who think this way, whether it be about wealth or about white privilege or whatever, is their genuine confusion. This is the thing Matt Taibbi found when he went and talked to Tea Partiers. Their genuine confusion as to why government benefits shouldn't come to them but not go to other people. Because, dude, I'm the man. I'm white. I'm privileged.
I earned all of this. I paid into this. This is mine.
This is mine. I get this because of who I am. What about those people? Oh, those people don't get it.
They don't deserve it. And I've had people say that to me.
Because they're inferior.
Yeah,
because God made them inferior.
Yep.
And that's what a lot of liberals, I think, don't understand. That's why people like Chris Hayes keep sort of slamming his head into this brick wall. What if we just engage? If we just talk? If we just negotiate? Yeah, but at the bottom of everything is this, wrapped into their DNA, this sense of absolute entitlement and privilege. That means I get to do shit you don't get to do because God made me better than you.
And it's my country. Yep.
And everything else flows from that. Once you understand that, everything else makes a lot more sense. How can you say one thing during one administration and the exact opposite during another? How can you impeach Clinton and applaud Bush and then turn right around and threaten to impeach Obama from the day because he's not my guy. He's not of my tribe. He's the bad guy. He's the enemy. Therefore, all things are permissible. And once you get that, everything else really does make a whole lot more sense. Anyway,
I want to just put a cherry on top of this sundae and mention that in the case of Donald Sterling, and also in the case of the Arizona anti-gay law, one of the things I found most telling about both of these is that corporations did not tolerate this because it's bad for business.
Right. That's the
and
that's
that
the...
money still talks. It is not just the millennials. Everyone was saying, oh, this is about the millennials and social media.
No.
Catching people and then not tolerating it.
No.
No, when you lose 9 sponsors in a day, as the Clippers did.
Yeah.
When your multi-million-dollar players are protesting and threatening to walk off, which means you're losing revenue, advertising revenue, not game revenue, because
right.
You told me if you own a sports team, you are not trying to make money.
No, you
it's
have
a
money.
Status. That it's your Lamborghini.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't have to make you any money. It's there for show. And if the players decide to walk off, your show is gone. So all of those, this is still about money talks. And this is why money as speech in politics is so important.
If you look at the right, if you look at conservatism, there really is a split between people who are still trying to make the intellectual argument for this silly shit
mm-hmm.
and people who've just given up, who just run in circles with their hair on fire screaming Benghazi.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask them what they're talking about, they call you a traitor. There's no reasoning with people like that. But the people who are still poking a stick into the middle of this mess, trying to come up with some sort of genuine conservative structure, this genuine conservative bulwark.
You're talking about Andrew Sullivan, aren't you?
Hell yes, I am. By the way, I just wrote a very long post about Andrew Sullivan and just covering a whole lot of territory that I'm not going to burden anybody on this podcast with. You can go over and read it, and you can correct my spelling mistakes.
Because you haven't done that yet, huh?
No, I haven't done that yet. But
you have. It's too bad. You don't have a time on your blog, do you, for what time you posted it?
I have a
date. No one should point out typos for the first 45 minutes after
Yeah. The first hour of typos are free. And I rarely revisit my own posts. They exist in my head in a pretty good, organized way. So I almost never go back to them. And when I do, after a day or two, I spot all the typos. I'm a great editor of other people's work. And by the time 2 days have elapsed, it's somebody else's work. So I can look at it without attachment.
All right. Well, before we get to Andrew Sullivan, yeah. who did sort of have a breakthrough this week, didn't he?
It broke something this week.
Yeah. I was reading the news this morning, and according to The Hill, their anti-immigration forces in Washington, including Laura Ingraham, have decided that there should be a pledge like there was for taxes.
Uh-huh.
There should be a pledge on anti-immigration reform. And you should have to sign the pledge that you won't let Mexicans into America.
Uh-huh.
Because they're afraid that in the name of reasonable immigration reform, some Republicans might be brought around to vote yes on reasonable immigration reform, and they don't want that. So they're going to have everybody sign this very simple pledge: I will vote against immigration reform, and that's it. And it is eighth grade. You know, do you like me? Yes, no.
Yes.
Notes in the locker is what it is.
Do you like me or just like me?
This is so immature and so. It is exactly what you said. It's screaming Benghazi. It's not solving the problem.
And that's the thing. The people who have the job, the entirely thankless job, which they could quit at any time if it really bothers them. You remember John Boehner went off the rez and whining about his own people, about his own members.
He was whining, and then he was imitating them.
Yeah.
Immigration reform is hard.
You're a Republican.
These are your people.
These aren't your people.
Aren't you the head of this group of people?
Didn't you run for this job? Yeah. Didn't you fight for this job? Aren't you fighting for it every day to lead this mob of idiots?
That's the thing. I don't think he is fighting anymore. I think he's given up. I think he's done. And at least that particular day, he was done. And
he'll sober up tomorrow.
Yeah.
And he'll realize what he said. He'll walk. But the people who have that, who sit right at the threshold of the public, mm-hmm. who have to explain what's going on inside the crazy tent to people outside the crazy tent in ways that are plausible. These are all pundits, virtually all politicians. These are conservative writers. These are centrists, especially, who will point to the liberal tent and say, yeah, but crazy shit's going on there, too. So why bother with this stuff? And Boehner has the same problems on this issue. It's, Republicans don't trust Barack Obama, the law-breaking Kenyan usurper, to enforce the law.
Uh-huh.
We could pass it, but he wouldn't enforce it. And, the first question out of any reporter's mouth should be, hasn't Barack Obama deported more people mm-hmm. than anybody else ever?
Shut up, Benghazi.
And then it's, shut up, Benghazi. Don't talk to me.
Fast and Furious.
And that's the moment at which, if you haven't stepped out of the tent yet, if you haven't gone independent in a true way, or you haven't said, fuck these Republicans, they are beyond redemption. If you haven't said that at that point, then you are the problem.
Well, and I'm really worried about the extent to which elected officials in the United States who are conservative
uh-huh.
are sidestepping laws and just saying, well, that doesn't apply to us.
Right.
Particularly the governor of Oklahoma, who is just a bloodthirsty, evil, evil person, as far as I'm concerned. The Supreme Court of Oklahoma put a stay on those two executions.
Uh-huh.
And she said, no, I'm going to disobey it. So they backed down.
Uh-huh.
And lifted the stay. And then there's this horrible botching of the execution, and it's torture, and it's just and we still have elected officials in the Congress now from Oklahoma saying, well, I really don't have a problem with that.
Of course you don't. Because to quote Charlie Pierce, who almost never actually swears without omitting letters so he can get it past the said, because these people are fucking barbarians. Yeah. That's why. They are unfit to be part of this society. They are completely and totally bereft of the basic ABC building blocks of being a decent citizen of the United States. And yet they run shit. It's not like they're just out there in armed camps, murmuring about those awful people who run the country. They run their states. They run big parts of this country. And they might very well take over the Senate in a few months. So it would be a hilarious thing to look at all this through the hindsight of history and say, weren't those slaveholders morons? 150 years later. Ha, 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 weren't those people fools? But this is not 150 years from now. This is now. And these people run your country. And they run it by obstruction or denial. They run it by lies. They run it by propaganda. They really, really don't like you. And they really want to get rid of you and put in place their ideal medieval Jesus land. And if you don't get that, then I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what would reach you. So, but if you do get that, see if you can get a friend or two to sort of come along who hasn't followed politics much or hasn't really paid attention to every time you see something crazy in the paper. Have you noticed there's an R next to it? Mm-hmm. Every time you hear someone saying just some outrageous fucking lie on television, have you noticed there's an R next to it? Have you noticed that the same people, again, who are outraged over this thing couldn't give a shit about it when it was George Bush doing it? Isn't it weird how their entire opinion structure changed 180 degrees on January 20th, 2009, and they will not talk about anything that happened before then? How can you help people like that gain control of your country?
Do you want to talk about Andrew Sullivan, or do you not want to talk about him?
Oh, just he made a boom boom in his pants again.
He has to confront both Bundy and Sterling in 1 week.
Well, he has to confront Bundy and Sterling and Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, yeah.
So on Monday, Andrew Sullivan forgives Niall Ferguson, his old friend, for saying things that are hideously bigoted.
Yep.
On Tuesday, he forgives the Duck Dynasty guy for saying things that are obviously racist and fundamentalist. On Wednesday, he calls for Alec Baldwin's fucking head for something he said to a paparazzi. On Thursday, he says Brendan Eich shouldn't have to suffer professionally for the hideously bigoted thing he did, because I like him and I don't like Alec Baldwin, apparently. Mm-hmm. And on Friday, here comes Donald Sterling, who said something in private that was horribly racist and got fired for it. And to no one's surprise, Andrew Sullivan thinks, yeah, he should have gotten fired for that. Because what he did is in no way comparable to what Brendan Eich did at all. Because he said mean stuff, and he made his employees suffer. And there's no evidence that Brendan Eich ever said bad things or made his employees suffer or used their race against them during employment. And you look at what the NBA did and all of his arguments for why the two cases are completely different fall apart, because the NBA never said any of the shit that as mitigating circumstances or aggravating circumstances that Andrew Sullivan is citing. He just wants to see one guy fired from his job because this thing made him angry, and he doesn't want to see another group of people fired because they're either peers of his or friends of his, or he doesn't find them threatening in a class or peer-to-peer kind of sense. And he really has flipped on this issue over and over and over again. And to the point of personally being embarrassed for him, because mm-hmm. he has so thoroughly fucked this thing up. If you think people should be fired for what they say and do off the job, on the job, in private, whatever, then say that. If you think they shouldn't be, then you should be opposed to all people who get fired for shit their boss thinks they did wrong. And that is basically going against the entire at-will employment movement, which I might add is a conservative idea. So he can't figure out where to come down on this. But I will say this. In this year of our Lord, 2014, Andrew Sullivan has finally noticed that race apparently plays a really big deal in American politics. Bless his heart.
I think we've been telling him that for 10 years.
Yeah. Well, and it's been true. I mean, this is a guy who came to this country in the mid-80s, mm-hmm. went to school here.
In the North.
In the North, at Harvard.
Yep.
And it went directly from Margaret Thatcher's teat to Ronald Reagan's underpants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just jumped right into the middle of the conservative movement and started being a fierce public intellectual, conservative public intellectual. And for years and years and years was one of the bulwarks against the liberal horde. And here it is, May 1st, 2004. I'm just going to read a very short quote from Mr. Sullivan. In trying to come to terms with the existence of Clive and Bundy and the existence of Donald Sterling.
Mm-hmm.
Another disadvantage I have in grasping all this is that I wasn't born in America and didn't grow up here. And so the contours of America's long and hideous conversation about race are not in my bones. All I can say is I'm trying to fit all the new data points in my worldview and haven't reached a conclusion. Now, if he were a bricklayer or an estate planner, that'd be fine. But Andrew Sullivan has spent the last 30 years as a conservative public intellectual, making the conservative case for conservative shit in this country. And now, at this late date, he looks behind him and notices, oh my goodness, there appears to be something to do with race in this country, and it's somehow attached to the conservative movement. I can't think of anything more disqualifying for a conservative public intellectual than to notice, after 30 years, holy shit, there appears to be a lot of racists in the conservative movement. I wonder when that happened.
I would like to suggest to Andrew Sullivan that he take a trip to Birmingham, Alabama.
Well,
and tour the Civil Rights Museum there. It costs $12 to get in. And he'd learn a lot, and he'd have a lot of data points.
Yeah.
To figure out about what happened, not only what happened back in the 60s and 50s and 40s in that part of America, but what's happening now. And I think he'd get a lot of data points from doing that. We're going to change gears now. I've got a letter from one of our previous correspondents who calls himself Rick James.
Hello, Rick James.
Hi, Rick James. And why don't you read this letter and then I'll read the next one.
All right.
All right. We have two letters to read today.
First one's from, this is from Mr. Rick James.
Right.
I wrote in a long time ago about how frustrated I was with my dumb conservative dad and his reality deficiencies. I think you use the pseudonym Rick James. I just moved back with my parents, lol, millennials, lol, economy, and it has gotten worse, but in a weird way. I am mature enough to realize that fighting is a waste of energy. I keep reminding myself that no one really cares what I or he thinks about the Voting Rights Act or whatever. It's not really worth it to stir the pot or create turmoil, and on a certain level, it's really funny that I'm kind of the only liberal in my family has contact with, even if they don't understand what that means at all. But I'm realizing more and more that racism is something of a cardinal sin to me. My generation, it's one thing to ignore the nonsense, and it is complete nonsense, I hear about politics. It's quite another to let comments about blacks pass without responding. I wonder if it is wrong of me, but so far I can't learn to let it stand. What is strange is how this makes me the radical, the upsetter, the black sheep. Perhaps I'm still raw from the commie paradise of Portland, where racism is pushed out of view and obviously not a part of everyday conversation. In just the past day, I've already heard crazy stuff about how Mexicans are stealing urns from mausoleums for scrap and spreading diseases. How Baltimore is horrible because of a culture of black laziness. Quote, they just want to shoot up and do drugs instead of finding work, unquote, etc., etc. Responding to these, even quietly and politely, as racist bullshit has earned me a lot of ridicule. Not just ridicule, but white-hot rage. Which is understandable, because people get angry when you call them a racist. And they don't really want to hear, they don't really hear the, quote, you might not be racist, but your unexamined comments perpetuate racist ideas in our society, unquote, part. But God, is white entitlement part of this? I don't care if it makes me a little shit. Too many in my family are dumb, small-minded assholes who think the fact that Barack Obama's middle name is Hussein means something sinister and dire. And they're assholes who never experience pushback on these opinions, who treat me like shit for saying, it's an incredibly common name. It just means handsome. Fox News and hate radio have trained my dad to think yelling, interrupting, belittling, and insulting people are effective ways to respond to criticism. It gets scary. Conservatives are such authoritarians. Everything is perfectly fine until you disagree with them. At which point, grab a helmet, and no matter your tone, they will boom at you that you're a radical who is destroying the social order. In a sense, he's right. The less political members of my family now consider me a joke. To them, letting a horribly disgusting comment pass is proper because it's just not important. And besides, I'm just instigating. My question is, should I can it? Should I just shut up about it? Am I being a jerk, a little shit, by disrupting family dinners and drives with my radical leftist crap? Because I can let racist comments from my grandparents pass, no problem, but having my father spew this stuff really bothers me. But actually confronting him leads to all sorts of sort of racist, but just ridiculous comments that are even harder to respond to. Like, quote, environmental racism, child hunger, climate change, anti-black oppression, housing discrimination don't exist, unquote. If I let the big stuff pass, it would be easier to ignore the little things, too.
Okay, and we stopped his letter there because he asked us to.
Yeah. Yeah.
We get it.
Yeah, absolutely we get it. Yeah.
We get it. And I'm reminded of Ecclesiastes.
Yes. Bible bitch.
Bible bitch. We have another Bible bitch letter coming along.
Okay.
to everything there is a season and what you have to do now with your family as opposed to what you might do later. Living under their roof has got to be very hard.
Yep.
I sure hope you're able to move out soon. That would be part of it. Because the power of away from is a powerful power.
Or get the DVD collection of All in the Family.
Yeah.
And play it and keep pointing at Archie Bunker and laughing.
Yeah. That's true. Eventually, you will create your own family.
Yeah.
And you have to decide what that family's going to look like and how they're going to interact. And this can be a lesson in how not to. I had a friend who was interested in going into directing. She'd been a producer in movies. She'd been a continuity producer and done all kinds of things for a film. And she was going to go into directing and directing commercials, actually. And she didn't know how to answer the response of the question of, well, you've had no experience directing. And she came up with the answer. She asked me about that. And I said to her, tell them how much experience you have had. Yeah. And how you know how not to do things.
Yes.
Here's the director I worked with who did things right. Here's a director who I worked with, who shall be nameless, who did things completely wrong. Here's how I will direct, because I have had 35 years in this industry, and I know the qualities of a good director. Here they are. Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're learning how not to be that parent.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways.
And you really do have to pick and choose. Mm-hmm. I'm blessed with a awesome hippie mom.
Yeah, me too.
In my father's case, my late father's case, I have to really pick and choose the things that he bequeathed to me, and stay away from a lot of his. He was not a particularly good parent. He wasn't particularly and he was raised horribly. So he had this sort of emotional blockage. He got more, I think, extreme and opinionated as he got older.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't fathom a lot of things that I thought were right on point. He drank. He was an alcoholic. But he took our family on adventurous trips to places we never would have gone otherwise. And he was very good at his job. He had a great deal of pride in his work, and he took a lot of pride in his work. And he was a reader. So there are things, admirable things, that you will see from a distance about your old man that you can take from him. But I've had to, here are all the things my dad did I never want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And make it a conscious effort not to be that guy.
Yeah, and that was a lot more forward in early in our marriage than it is now. And I say that knowing we've only been married 3 years. But for the first 6 months of our marriage, you were really, I hope it's okay to talk about this, but you were continually mentioning, I don't want to become my dad.
Right.
And I'm getting, and you were just, for the first time in your life, confronting what it's like to have an 8-year-old.
Right.
And it's stressful.
And there's a lot of similar situations, like running a college facility.
IT department, yes.
Teaching with just absolutely insane users who don't want to hear it and who don't want to do it their way.
Don't put pizza face down on the keyboard, please.
Right. So there's a lot of 8-year-old-ish behaviors that I've had to deal with as a supervisor, as a manager, as a director, as a bunch of other things with long titles. But actual 24/7 dadding.
With three kids is something
I just came to with zero running room. I mean, mm-hmm. I was an uncle and all those other things. But and fortunately, usually when I open my mouth, my mom comes out.
Uh-huh.
And that's really good.
And she's great because she sounds like Elizabeth Warren most of the time.
She does. She really does.
It drives us crazy every time we see Elizabeth Warren. Now we think, that's your mom.
It really is. But you really do have to separate. Once you get on with the business of creating your own tribe, whatever that might be, you have to get on with the business of disposing of or putting on a shelf all the things that, I'm never going to do that.
Right.
I will say a couple of things. In my dad's defense, is I have on at least a couple of occasions going, that's why he was so pissed. Do I get that now. But how you express that, how you communicate your state of mind, how you process your emotions rather than reacting to them, is really important. So And I think Blue Gal's right. Write it down.
Yeah, I did say that. I put this in our notes about your letter, and I didn't know how to say it without being patronizing or sounding like Arianna Huffington. You know, darling, you need to journal some more. Journaling is so important. And I hate journal as a verb.
Yeah.
But it is important to write. It is important. And you're obviously a writer because you've typed this letter up and explained the situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing to have private thoughts in a private place and have a place to vent. And I think that a notebook with Archie Bunker on the front of it, if you could arrange that, is a good, you know, make sure it's not Hello Kitty. That's all I ask.
You can also, just as a matter of testing the waters, this works in a lot of different venues. It might not work in yours. It probably wouldn't work most of the time, but lead with the question, what if you're wrong?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if you and I sat down and you had an opinion about something and I showed you that you're wrong? What would you do then?
Mm-hmm.
And if the answer is, shut the fuck up, I know what I'm talking about, or how dare you, or something just equally bullheaded, mm-hmm. walk away. Forget about it. You can't. Voting can change public policy. Voting can't change your family dynamic. And so...
And I think whenever possible, you've talked about how hard it is for you to just sit there and take it.
Yeah.
Try some behavior modification. Whenever racism expressed, get up and walk away.
Yeah.
And see how long it takes before they decide, I'm just not going to bring up that statement. Or if I do, I will not have an audience from him.
Unless you're in a moving vehicle.
Which yeah, a moving vehicle or dinner, it's kind of hard, but...
Or respond with oblique comments that are 90 degrees to the conversation.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
You know, yeah. You hear something racist. You know who's a great writer?
Zora Neale Hurston.
Jonathan Swift is a great writer. You know who's awesome? You know, I don't know if you've ever seen this movie, but Seiko was a great porn star. just, you know, completely... Just stuff that knocks them out of their tracks. Yeah. They don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Yep.
Have you ever seen that movie where that guy and that dog? You know what's you know who's funny? Bill Murray. And he's gotten funnier as he's gotten older. But it's a deeper, richer kind of fun. Coffee sure is delicious, isn't it? That's a lot of weather we're having, isn't it? And just, you know.
And I also believe that wherever possible, find places where you can stay positive and kill them with kindness in other ways. Can I wash your car, Dad? Can I vacuum your car out, Dad? Can I, what could I do to help you today? Is there something I could do to make your life easier, especially since you're living under their roof? I've had lots of experiences where somebody who was predisposed to hate me, the second wife of my first husband, but it's complicated here, but, you know, for 3-4 years, she hated my guts. I was a gold digger. I was interloper. I was didn't want her kids. I didn't want to blend my families. I was this, I was that. And none of that was true.
Right.
And by the time she died, frankly, I visited her in the hospital. I took her shopping. We went to movies together. We went to lunch. And when I went to the hospital to visit her, I just said sister-in-law, you know, because we had the same last name and why not? And I was able to explain to the doctor that because the man we had both been married to, and I was still married to at the time, was coming in to see her and me as I was visiting her in the ER. She had a real bad health problem. He's a stress test. Make sure that she has limited access to him because he's going to stress her out. He stresses everybody out. So, you know, 5 minutes and then he's got to go. and if he's listening to that, he knows what I'm talking about. So, yeah, kill him with kindness. And finally, you know, the relationship you have with those people is only half your responsibility.
Yeah.
Make sure your half comes from a place of love and nonviolence and respect for yourself. And that's the only real advice I have.
Good advice. But I should have written all this down.
It's hard.
It is.
Don't
it really
it's
is
not
hard.
Hard.
And there's a certain amount of adaptive behavior you will have to go through.
Mm-hmm.
Just remember that it's adaptive, that you took on certain traits and characteristics to cope with a problem that is, by definition, temporary.
Mm-hmm.
And shed those things as you need to. But if you're in a hostile environment, You know, if you're, you know, I spent many an evening with alcoholic dad sort of bearing down on me. And I had to, my strategy was, tell me about the Army.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Tell me about the good old days. Tell me about when you were a kid. Tell me. And I collected a lot of interesting stories, but it certainly diverted him onto a less sort of rageful path when he got introspective and talked about, you know, whatever else. Then he'd get maudlin and fall asleep. And I was, you know, boom, that, I'm
then,
done.
Then you're done. Yes.
Anyway, hope that was helpful.
Hope that helped. Yeah. If anyone else has any advice for him, feel free to write in. We'll either pass it along or read it on the air.
Oh, we'll make a blog post out of it. Don't lie.
Right. Something like that.
We're obsessive.
We have another letter from an anonymous friend of the podcast. And he said, dear Driftglass and Blue Gal, and dear Blue Gal specifically, you spoke about seeing the path you must follow in your church life. I know it is important to you. You sometimes tread lightly on your faith on behalf of your secular listeners. I am an atheist who loves Bible Bitch. You just need to have Driftglass record a reverberating Bible Bitch clip with a thunderclap effect to introduce the segment. And so here it is. This is what we did.
Bible Bitch.
That's not scriptural.
Okay. I used to teach. How's that? Does that sound good? I used to teach Sunday school at an Episcopal church in Glendale, Arizona. I did a class once because Return of the King was still in theaters about finding Jesus in Tolkien. My best bit was showing Gandalf to be the Good Shepherd. His fight with Balrog in Moria was like the I am the doorway passage. The kids got it. They really appreciated it. So I'm not in that gig anymore.
Well, yeah.
You know what you need to do? You need to go to a Unitarian church and teach that. They lap it up.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Unitarian Sunday school, and a teacher threw a sheet over each one of us and asked us to pretend we were swimming in amniotic fluid as an unborn baby.
Wow.
Yeah. But we're gonna discuss the birth process today, kids. All right.
Okay. will there be crackers?
Yeah, there'll be graham crackers afterwards. Okay.
Okay.
This causes a bit of friction with my wife, who is bringing our daughter to the Lutherans, mostly harmless.
Yeah.
Everything always goes back to Hitchhiker's Guide, I swear to God.
Uh-huh.
Newly deconverted atheists should spend some time listening to other atheists and thinking through their change of heart before talking about it. There are a couple of conversations with my wife I regret for saying the wrong things. Well, bless you for saying that. You know, that's true for all of us.
Yeah.
Anyway, I still engage with people of faith and try to make allies. And then he quotes from Fred Clark's excellent blog at Patheos. And I want to read this quote. I'll put a link up at our Facebook page. Did you hear the one about the big macho Marine who beat up the pansy liberal college professor for mocking the Marine's God? You must not have a Facebook account.
Ah.
People I know, friends of mine, people who are better than that, even if they forget at times, think that one is great and godly. We know, O ye of faith, we know you want to beat us up because God will not be mocked. Is it God or you who has such a fragile ego?
Yeah.
Bring a couple of friends to my beating. You are going to need them. It's really no different than when the same people talk about the need to put God back in the schools.
Yeah.
Who's God? As if I need to ask. And shouldn't the rest of us get a say in this? And no one is stopping you from praying, prayer being an act of conscious thought. It does not require the moving of the hands or the lips. It might even be done best in this quiet, personal way. Yeah, the Bible has something to say about that, actually.
It sure does. Yeah.
I think your book even has something about that. I know, not Leviticus or Acts, so who has time for that hippie crap? Finally, I want to hear from any Christian that what words you would use to explain to your Messiah why it was necessary to torture another human being. And that's a question for Sarah Palin. Definitely.
Yeah, really. Really.
If the difficulty of this eludes you, go grab The Passion off of Netflix. I'm going to go with I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong. Neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance happeneth to them all. I could get behind most anything from Ecclesiastes, but I too am an atheist. I think if I still believed, I would pick the bit from Revelation. And the Spirit and the Bride say, come. Ah. Do you have a favorite Bible verse, Driftglass?
Well, being Irish and despondent.
Yeah.
I like Job. A lot.
Oh, yeah. Which verse?
Well, because where were you when I laid the foundation of the world?
Yeah.
Because it's the Old Testament God saying, fuck you. Uh-huh. I owned you. I made you. I can do whatever the hell I want with you. Yep. And the concept that version 1.0 was broken, was a system under which you cannot live. The most that even if you perform all the sacrifices correctly, even if you follow every rule, even if you follow the rules for other people, for mm-hmm. the rest of your family, you make all the sacrifices for the rest of your family, as Job did. Job was the most righteous guy in the Bible. And because he was righteous, God made a bet with the devil that he would stay righteous no matter what God did to him. So God plagued him and screwed him up and killed his family and did a whole bunch of horrible things to him. And finally, you know, Job is credited with being patient. Job wasn't patient. Job was pissed.
Yeah, yeah.
Job wanted to know what the hell he'd done wrong. And God basically said, screw you. I get to do whatever I want. I'm God. Look it up. It's right in the title. And that approach to faith was what was supposed to have been erased and replaced with this. Philip Dick writes a lot about he wrote a lot of books about faith and religion and sort of very much informed his writing. But the idea that Jesus becomes your beside helper. He's the guy who has the magic swipe card to get you through this horrible machine that will destroy you no matter what you do, because that's the way the universe is set up. And that there's the idea that there's the God in the sky, not the literal bearded sky God. There's the great big force that runs the universe. And there's the petty force on the ground that tries to block you from that one by being vicious and destructive and vindictive. And is basically the God that Sarah Palin worships.
Yep.
And that's why there's all of this false worship, worshiping the wrong things. And, you know, we're dumb, we're human, we're mortal, we make mistakes. And I completely get it when an atheist listener comes to our blog, my blog, and comments that religion is the problem unless you destroy your sky god, screw what you say in church. The whole idea is superstitious and claptrap and awful. And unless you deny your religion and become an atheist, you're no better than insert
blah, blah, blah. Yes.
You're awful. Okay. You know, I get why you say that. And believe me, I wrestle with agnosticism every day. Mm-hmm. You and I have disagreements about certain things, about grace and what happens and the efficacy of certain behavior. But I'm not blind to the effect that this has on people, both good and bad. And I can see something happening to people who are actively participating in an open, loving, humane way.
Yeah.
In a community that respects life and virtue and tries to do the right thing, tries really hard to do the right thing, and tries to correct itself when it fails. And people who just say, you know, fuck it, the universe is indifferent. Why trouble ourselves? Now, again, as you always say, the atheists who live a decent, good, and humane life without the crutch or the caste or the structure,
the carrot or the stick of religion. Yep, that's
hold them in place. Hold a higher place in moral estimation than me.
Yep, absolutely.
They're better than me. Mm-hmm. They get to do this. They do it naked without any sort of cloak or protection. Yep. But all I can say is I've lived lots of different lives, and this one seems to function better than the others.
And you're not converting anyone else to that life, and that's
not at all.
Deeply important.
Not at all.
I have too much respect for God and do feel that atheists are, you know, God's children that have grown up and moved away. And God still loves them, but they're not there. They're not in his church. That's okay with him. And I'm with the Pope. Who am I to judge? You know,
and at the other end of that spectrum, there's I can't quite put my finger on it, but I do believe there's the address from Jesus to the zealots, maybe,
mm-hmm.
about who's stronger, you or your God.
Yeah, yeah.
Your God is stronger than you need him or her. He does or he, she don't need you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, quit worrying about blasphemy and silly shit like that. You know, don't you understand? And from my point of view, the whole idea of being petty and vindictive and worrying about, you know, the sort of Mark Twain-ish, apparently God sits in the clouds and is very offended if you don't sing his praises all day long. And focuses really? His entire attention on humanity.
And, you know, that's why Jesus, when he came back on Easter after the resurrection, the first thing he said to the disciples was, "Well, you'll never guess what happened to me."
Yeah. That's the last time I go home for the weekend. Jesus, he's an ass. But the more science is out there, the more science takes us to the edge of the universe and looks at the gravitational waves from the Big Bang, and the more galaxies we discover and near Earth planet, Goldilocks planets we discover, the more majestic and the universe becomes, and broad and sweeping and huge, the more of an enormous cathedral it becomes, the harder it is to sustain the belief that there's a little tiny petty God living up on a cloud who created all this.
A pledge. And if you haven't signed the pledge of Grover Norquist of pleasing God first, then you're off his list.
But it's only 9,000 years old, and he's very angry if you – is so absurd on the face of it. It's so stupid on the face of it. And I'm not saying that we are destined to succeed as a species.
Yeah, right.
I'm perfectly content with the belief that whatever force guides the universe – would be perfectly delighted to see us get better, but is not going to step in to fix us if we fuck up. Hmm. I'm much more of a believer in that 2001 approach, that the reason the monolith was buried on the moon was only after we reached that point were we worthy to go on to the next place.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if we had died out as a species, it never would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
I'm absolutely fine with that view of the universe.
Well, and wasn't it George Carlin who said, "The Earth isn't going to end. Humans might not be on the Earth anymore, but the Earth is a rock in outer space. It'll be all right."
Yeah, the Earth needed plastic, so it created humanity to invent plastic, and we've done our job. And now it's time for us to go.
Yeah,
and
I want to end. We're going to do Science Fiction University, but I'm going to end with the Bible story that came to me this week when I heard Sarah Palin talking about comparing waterboarding to baptism. And so I would like to read this from Luke 18. And it's The Message, which is one of my favorite translations.
So we're not going to talk about Rob Ford?
No. Well, Rob Ford, thank God for Rob Ford going into rehab.
Yeah.
They finally made him go to rehab.
Yeah.
So, you know, good for them.
Yeah.
And I hope he finds healing. And because he's a fun guy at parties.
He sure is. If John Belushi had ever become politically powerful... No, really. Belushi was smarter and funnier than that. But
funnier than that.
We'll do Rick Scott and Ralph Nader and a bunch of other stuff next week.
But. Yeah. Well, and Rick Scott we can talk about that for a minute. Let's talk about those two things because you reminded me. Rick Scott went to an old folks home to ask them their horror stories about Obamacare.
Uh-huh.
And one lady said, "Oh, my daughter has pre-existing condition. Now she's got insurance. It's awesome."
What? Did no one scream this audience?
No one screamed at him.
No.
And one woman, this was brought up to us on Twitter, and I want to thank the person. Thank you very much for letting us know about this Rick Scott thing. I loved what one of the 90-something women at the old folks' home said. She said, "We're the United States of America, not the United States of senior citizens."
Yep. Yep.
So it's not all about us getting our Medicare and screw everybody else.
No.
So amen to that. Tell me about Ralph Nader.
Oh, Ralph Nader I was put in mind of that quote from the very end of Inherit the Wind. I'm reminded that the point at the very end of the movie where the antagonist has died.
Mm-hmm.
William Jennings Bryant has died. He won the case and he collapsed. And Spencer Tracy gives this speech about, you know, not judging a person by the very last act of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets accused of being a hypocrite by his reporter friend and a monster. And he's, you know what he was like, this Bible thumping, weeping jerk who ruined everything. And Spencer Tracy says, "Look, a giant once lived in that body."
Mm-hmm.
And he failed because he looked for God too high up and too far away.
I'm trying to think of what this has to do with Ralph Nader, but go ahead.
Well, it's Ralph Nader has done great things for this country.
Yeah. And I voted for Ralph Nader against George Bush and Al Gore. I did. In Alabama.
Yeah.
I knew it wasn't going to affect the outcome of the election. So I voted for Ralph Nader.
Ralph Nader has been a protector, a sort of ombudsman at large for the safety and welfare of this country. He's been on the right side of many issues. He saved God knows how many millions of lives by taking on the auto industry.
Yep.
And yet now at the end of his life, he is still inserting himself into public arguments and talking out his ass about Rand Paul.
Rand Paul being awesome.
Yeah. Also, maybe we should run Oprah. And you know what? Maybe Barack Obama should be impeached because of Libya.
Because of Libya. Yeah.
And, you know, I look at this once great man who is essentially now just sort of, oh, you know what? Here. Let me give Crazy Uncle Liberty one more thing to beat you over the head with.
Yep.
Because now Crazy Uncle Liberty's emails say even the liberal Ralph Nader believes Barack Obama should be impeached.
Well, and it's like the woman on Fox this week who said, well, yeah, Bundy's bad. But, you know, Cindy Sheehan, she protested outside the Western White House.
Yes.
And
she said she shouldn't have to pay her taxes. And it's this pause, this dramatic pause. Like, what? She
mourned her dead son who was in the military.
She even suggested that George Bush should be impeached. Oh, the horror.
Yeah.
Well, really? Because that's pretty much the third word in every sentence that comes out of every Republican's mouth in this country for the last 5 years. So I don't understand. Well, it was impeaching George Bush. That was blasphemy. Yeah. So Ralph Nader was a great man, did many great things, and really needs to sort of fade into the sunset. He needs to join Jimmy Carter and build houses for Habitat for Humanity. But he keeps reinserting himself into a conversation that has passed him by. Mm-hmm. And it is unfortunate because I have a lot of admiration for Ralph Nader. And I'm sure he sincerely believes what he says. But Ralph, you're not it's not that you're not helping me. You're not helping to accomplish the things you want to accomplish. You're tripping over your own dick, and that's really unfortunate. And it's a shame that at the end of your life, because he's old, God bless him, I hope he lives another 20 years. But at the end of his effective career, this is what people remember him for. Yeah. And that's a dirty, rotten shame, because he's better than that.
Just looking up how old he is.
And he's right on the issues. He's right about plutocrats. He's right about corporations.
You know what? Ralph Nader is exactly the same age as Sterling.
Yeah.
They're both 80.
Yeah.
So there's somebody who took his life in a much different and better direction.
Yes.
Than now I'm going to say Roger Sterling.
Donald Sterling.
Donald Sterling.
I know.
The combination of madmen.
Yes.
So, yeah. I mean, he's 80. So, and
That's an age when you should be able to sit on your porch and say silly shit all you want. But you're doing it with this massive reputation behind you and a microphone in front of you. And you are really, you know, I think it is unfortunate if you are remembered for this and not.
Well, I wish, you know, if I had a wish for Ralph Nader, and I don't get to say these kind of things, but income inequality is something you ought to work on.
Yeah.
All of us should be working on. All right. I'm going to end with Luke 18.
All right.
And there's lots of stories in Luke 18 about the rich and powerful. There's three stories between the rich and powerful and a schlub. Three stories in a row. And so whoever put this together was definitely talking about economic justice and hammering it over your head. Verse 9. He told his next story to some who were complacently pleased with themselves over their moral performance and looked down their noses at the common people. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee, the other a tax man. The Pharisee posed and prayed like this, "Oh God, I thank you that I am not like other people, robbers, crooks, adulterers, or heaven forbid, like this tax man. I fast twice a week and tithe on all my income." Meanwhile, the tax man slumped in the shadows, his face in his hands, not daring to look up, said, "God, give mercy. Forgive me, a sinner." Jesus commented, "This tax man, not the other, went home made right with God."
Uh-huh.
If you walk around with your nose in the air, you're going to end up flat on your face. But if you're content to be simply yourself, you will become more than yourself. And I like that for Rick James, too.
Yeah.
If you're content to be simply yourself, you will become more than yourself. Stand up for yourself. Be the good person that you... the best person you can be in any circumstance. And
also, I hate to say this.
Yeah.
But I'm a much worse person than you are.
Mm.
And, the despondent Irish writer in me wants to point out that in addition to that, certain aspects of Christian faith make a really wicked knife to wield.
Yeah.
When you're arguing with someone who wants to be a hateful asshole.
And call himself a Christian.
And call himself a Christian. I thought
this was a Christian nation. Oh, my God.
Oh, Father, I thought Jesus called you to love everyone. Why isn't your answer loving and humble, Dad? this is what
That's
John.
A good way to get thrown out of his house.
Out of a moving car, too. But wait till you're John Fugelsang and you have your own radio show, and then you can get away with that. So. Hello, John Fugelsang. Come on our show, John Fugelsang.
All right.
You'll do anything else. Why not come on our show?
He's been on my show.
I know he has. You've interviewed him.
I've interviewed him. We had a lot of fun. All right. He had as many Skype problems as we've had today.
Yeah.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Buffy. And Buffy is our very first international internet kitty. She lives in Guadalajara, Mexico, and she is very beautiful. She sits under the bushes and will not make comments to the media. Good for her. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise.
So, Blue Gal, how are those internet kitties doing this week?
We've got a big announcement. The internet kitties are the official live tweeters for HuffPo's all-important side boob coverage at the White House Correspondents Dinner.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
All right. Well, we have a Science Fiction University from our friend Dogfaced Herman. Thank you very much. He sent us a bunch, so we'll be busy with these for a month or so. This particular collection is 10 audio clips.
Oh.
They are all comedy. There is no Big Bang Theory or Red Dwarf.
All right, then I'm screwed.
In any of the 10 questions.
Uh-huh. Now, are these, well, I guess we'll find out, but I wondered if these are comedy shows or these are just shows in which something funny is said. Probably comedies.
All of them are comedy shows, I would say.
Uh-huh.
One of them is a movie, and the rest are television or have been on television. Let me put it that way. Yeah.
Well, this should be tricky because no one in science fiction has a sense of humor, so...
But all the people that write comedy are science fiction geeks.
Yes.
So.
That's true.
That helps.
Very true. All right.
Fire away. Number one. And what he wants to know is, what show is this and what is it parodying?
As per your request, please find enclosed The Last Man on Earth. Finally, solitude. I can read books for all eternity. It's not fair. It's not fair. Wait, my eyes aren't that bad. I can still read the large print books. Ah, it's not fair. Well, lucky I know how to read Braille. Ah!
Okay, well, the parody is Burgess Meredith's episode on The Twilight Zone. It's Time Enough at Last.
Correct.
And wonderful episode. Just wonderful stuff. And one of them was...
You're delaying because you have to tell us what the show is that's parodying it.
Because I have no idea. Some of the voices sound really familiar, but I don't
Futurama.
Oh, well, of course it's Futurama.
All right.
I should just guess everything to be Futurama until stipulated otherwise because they did parody everything.
Number two.
Uh-huh.
Are you sure we've lost power on our stealing mechanism, Link?
Oh, I'm afraid so, Doctor.
Try that one.
What, this one here?
Uh-huh.
I already did.
I didn't see you.
Yeah, that's Miss Piggy gives it away. That's the Muppet.
Yeah, that's Biggs the Muppets.
Biggs in space.
Biggs in space. Very good. Okay, number three.
I hate every ape I see, from chimpanzee to chimpanzee. No, you'll never make a monkey out of me.
Oh, that is one of the early, one of my favorite Simpsons episodes. That's Troy McClure in Planet of the Apes, the musical on The Simpsons, which is just a wonderful
episode. And who's singing it? Which actor is singing it?
That's the late, great Phil Hartman.
Right.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right. Now, here we have number four. Name the show and name... Well, that's all I'm going to tell you, and then you'll have to explain the show to us.
There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
Montalbani?
London Philharmonic.
Annie's biography?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
You know, no arms, nice rack.
Hey.
Why not? We've bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
Oh, first of all, that's not just Mystery Science Theater 3000. That's the Age of Joel.
Yes. Very good.
Early years, you know, the
good years.
when he was acoustical.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea what the movie is, but I would swear to you the voice of the person is Peter Graves.
And, you know, I went and looked that up, and it is Peter Graves.
Yeah.
Unbelievable that you got that. Well, the movie is It Conquered the World.
Oh, well, Peter Graves was in several science fiction movies.
Yeah.
And I didn't.
He's shaped the right way for an astronaut. You know, he looks like an astronaut.
And I didn't know until many, many, many years after it mattered that he was James Arness's brother.
Yeah.
And then you look at him, and go, oh, of course they are.
Of course they are. Yep. Okay, number five. This is someone asking another person four questions, asking a celebrity four questions.
Uh huh.
Tell me who the celebrity is, and tell me can you answer those questions.
The celebrity.
And if you can name the show, that would help too.
You know, starting a sea voyage from landlocked Colorado may not have been the best idea.
We'll drive to the river and then take the river to the ocean.
Actually, I never thought I'd see you again. I have a couple Star Trek questions, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
What time did you guys have to get up in the morning? Does every writer write for one character? What's the best boy? I saw it in the credits once. Why don't they call it Planet Trek? You never go to a star. You, not one episode.
Well, the celebrity's LeVar Burton.
Right. Right, very good.
They're asking Star Trek questions. And the only show I know right offhand that had Star Trek people show up in it was Family Guy, I think.
Oh, no. This is Community.
Okay. Well, I have never watched Community, to my shame. So I would not have gotten that. And I don't know what the four questions are.
Well, the four questions were, what time do you have to get up in the morning? Did one writer write for one character? You know, no, though I don't think you know the answer to any of these questions, and I don't think LeVar Burton knows either.
Well, I would take a crack at them, I mean, if you'd like, but no.
The ship was on ship time.
Yeah, the ship was on
three shifts, so.
It's essentially a Navy ship, so it's on three different shifts. Writers don't write for any one person, although writers do tend to favor one character. If somebody can handle writing for Picard or writing for whoever better, they usually give it to them. But yeah, okay.
All right, number six this is the only one that's a movie.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So a construction job of that magnitude would require a hell of a lot more manpower than the Imperial Army had to offer. I'll bet they brought independent contractors in on that thing. I think the average stormtrooper knows how to install a toilet main. All they know is killing in white uniforms.
Oh, that's Clerks.
Yes,
that's
one of
Clerks.
My favorite movies.
Yeah, they're shooting the shit about how actually you go about building a Death Star.
I saw that movie on a blind date.
Uh-huh.
And I impressed my date because I told him about 7/8 through the movie. And if you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
But if you haven't, this won't spoil it. But about 7/8 through the movie, I leaned over to my date and I said, that guy's still in the bathroom.
Ah.
Oh, yeah, he is. Okay.
Yeah, but I was a fan of Kevin Smith's earlier work.
Earlier than Clerks?
Yeah, he really sold out with Clerks, I think.
All right, number seven. This is a TV show, and on the TV show, they are talking about another TV show. Name the two shows.
Hold the fleet's position now. Did you hear me? Now.
Look, Adama goes like this. Now. It's boiling inside you.
Starbuck enters angrily.
Where the hell have you been?
Flying the freak all over the place.
It's frack.
Yeah.
That's pretty clearly Edward James Olmos.
Yes.
So it's Battlestar Galactica, obviously.
Yeah.
I have no idea what context it's in.
Dogface Truman says, extra points if you can identify Ronald D. Moore.
Yeah.
Did you hear his voice in there?
I believe I did. Ronald D. Moore used to write for Star Trek. and did some very good episodes and then really got tired of the Star Trek universe. And he's the guy who reinvented Battlestar Galactica when nobody thought that was a good idea.
Yeah, because it was, who wants to do Dirk Benedict's hair in space again? Come on.
What Harlan Ellison dubbed Battlestar Ponderosa.
Yeah, Battlestar Ponderosa with hair, with 80s hair, 70s
Lauren
hair.
Or green striking poses.
Yeah.
Although, the characters are the same, and some of the walk-on characters are the same, and so forth. So the idea that
you take... It's done more darkly and violently, yes.
Well, they took it seriously. They actually took the elements, and they really took it. They didn't make it into, like, Lost in Space. They didn't make it into the Will Robinson and Dr. Smith show.
Well, or they didn't make it into Starsky and Hutch. That's what everybody was doing at that point. All right. This is Portlandia, by the way.
Oh, all right. Well,
the table read of Battlestar Galactica.
Another show I've only seen in clips on.
Yeah, we don't have Showtime. Well, Portlandia is on IFC, so I guess we could be watching that if we had time. All right. Yeah,
but no.
Number 8, name the actor and the show.
Well, I, for one, am exhausted. It's been a trying day, and I must rest my fantastic brain for tonight.
Yeah, that is Vincent Price, mm-hmm. the inimitable Vincent Price, doing his egghead turn on Batman.
So many people did a turn on Batman.
Vincent Price, who got me beat up when I was 8 years old. He did. He got me beat up when I was 8 years old.
Why?
How did that happen, Drift Glass?
Oh, well, I remember you told this story that you were on the bus and you saw Vincent Price.
I was. We were at the Art Institute.
You said, hey, there's Vincent Price. And you said, you didn't see him.
Liar.
You. Yes.
Liar. No, we were on a field trip at the Art Institute in Chicago. And there was Vincent Price. And I knew who the hell Vincent Price was. I had seen monster movies. I knew who he was. And nobody believed me. And it haunts me to this day. Anyway, way to go, Vincent Price.
Number 9 is... name the band, and then name the show.
Here's a song that was beautiful when performed by my ancestor Art.
Are you going to Scarborough Fair?
Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme.
Yeah, I'm going to say I don't know, and I don't know, but it sounds really good.
Obviously a parody of Simon and Garfunkel, but it's Cylon and Garfunkel from, again, Futurama.
Yeah, again, I should just stipulate Futurama is...
a show that...
like in Trivial Pursuit, it's John F. Kennedy, Ernest Hemingway.
So, yeah. All right, number 10, last one.
All right.
Name the show, and also which version... This show had many versions, so which version of the show is this?
Yes, I said I'd have to think about it, didn't I? And it occurs to me that running a program like this is bound to cause sensational public interest.
And so,
any philosophers who are quick off the mark are going to clean up in the prediction business. You'll be on the gravy train for life.
That would be The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Uh-huh.
And considering the very low special effects quality, I'm going to go with the original radio play.
That's right. BBC, 78, uh-huh. 1978. Amazing to me that universe was written week by week as a radio play.
On the fly.
On the fly. I mean, literally, the what did he say? Douglas Adams always said, I love deadlines. I love watching them fly by.
Yeah, the whooshing sound they make.
It's very science fiction-y. Thank you, Dog-Faced Herman. And thank you all. And everybody have a great week. We love you.
Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye.